Song has long been a favourite of mine and was Bert Bacharach's favourite of all his compositions. I like the Dionne Warwick version you just heard, but it was first recorded by Cilla Black, who apparently had to go through about 28 takes in the studio until Bacharach felt that they had achieved the magic he was looking for. And I like Hal David's words too. It's not wise to be cruel, follow the golden rule. Most of us don't apply the golden rule when it comes to other animals, and like Michael Caine's lovable but ethically dubious character, Alfie, we're pretty much lost in an ethical fog when it comes to our relationship with other animals. You're with Safe and Sound, Aotearoa New Zealand's only animal rights radio show, broadcasting through the Access Radio sector all over the country. My name's Sandra Kyle, and today we discuss possums. Yes, you heard right. The poor old maligned possum, the little imported marsupial with pure intentions, who is the recipient of sheer loathing by the general public. They're the spawn of the devil, unleashed in the bowels of hell. If we see them on the road in the dead of night, we aim at them with our car as a weapon. We put guns in the hands of mere children to go out and shoot them. We use their dead bodies to win prizes at school family fun days. What's going on in our national psyche with regard to possums, who are admired and protected in their native country in Australia? Could the possum be a scapegoat for human beings who have done most of the deforesting over the last 150 years, most recently for dairy herds? Of course, they're a problem. They're opportunists, and while mainly vegetarian, they'll eat snails, for example, and birds' eggs. Man is their only predator, and that's why they've done so well. But even after decades of mass extermination measures such as 1080, we haven't solved the problem of their prolific numbers. Blasting them out of trees hasn't worked. Trapping them and then smashing in their skulls hasn't worked. After all our measures against them, they're still thriving to the tune of about 30 million. Isn't it time to put our resources into other ways of controlling these animals that doesn't cause them terrible suffering and could be more effective? Today we'll be speaking with Angela Singer, whose confronting artwork, known as Detaxidermy, makes us reflect on our relationship with the animals we hunt and kill. But first, Dr. Jane Goodall is in the country this week, and in case anyone has not heard of Jane Goodall, she's a British primatologist, ethologist, anthropologist and UN Messenger of Peace, considered to be the world's foremost expert on chimpanzees, known for her over 55-year study of social and family interactions of wild chimps at Gombe National Park in Tanzania in 1960, round about there. She's the founder of the Jane Goodall Institute and the Roots and Shoots Learning Program, which is for teachers and other community leaders to use with their students to help them develop environmental conservationist and humanitarian programs to improve their communities. Jane Goodall is a vegan. Well, I did try hard to get her onto the program, but unsurprisingly, I couldn't. She's very much in demand, and she's also well into her 80s. I noticed that even her interview with Catherine Ryan on Radio New Zealand was only 12 minutes long. But Radio New Zealand kindly said I could use part of the interview, so I'd like to play two short excerpts. The first one is just a postscript, really, to last week's show that looked at climate change.
There was a lot of speculation at the time that so many countries just signed it and that it wouldn't mean anything because there wouldn't be legislation to back it up. But I've been quite pleasantly surprised at how it really has pushed many countries to trying to curb carbon emissions. It's raised a growing awareness about the effect of heavy meat eating that's having around the world as habitats are destroyed to grow the grain to feed the animals and fossil fuel is used to transport the grain, the animals and the meat. And also that these billions of animals that are now in these appalling conditions are producing methane gas, you know, food in one end and gas out the other. And that is a contributing factor to climate change. And it's not that climate change will affect the planet. It is already. And I've seen it. I've seen the ice melting. I've seen the glaciers on top of the mountains disappearing. Mount Kilimanjaro was the great symbol in Tanzania, the snows of Kilimanjaro. There's hardly any snow for most of the year now. And sea levels are rising. The ocean is warming. What we're doing to this planet is deadly.
Deadly is the word that Dr. Goodall uses to describe our actions in terms of climate change. She also mentions the raising of cattle, as we discussed last week, hugely contributes to global warming also. Dr. Goodall also had something to say about the problem of pests, in particular possums.
Another big area at the moment, of course, and I'm interested in your view on this, is trying to save some of our most endangered species. And the government's embarked on this very focused program of predator control, dubbed Predator Free New Zealand. What's your view on it?
Well, the view, you know, this is one of these ethical problems. And it's almost impossible to get a really balanced view. But all I can say is that these introduced species like possums and cats and so forth that are decimating New Zealand's bird life is a tragedy. And do we want to try and save New Zealand's indigenous life? Yes, we do. It's not the fault of these introduced species that they're here. We brought them here for the most part, introduced them. And they are individuals whose lives matter. I mean, and a possum's life is just as valuable and it's just as much an individual as a kakapo, for example. So, yes, we need to remove them. How do we remove them humanely? I don't know. It's really, really difficult.
A sentient animal's life is important to them, and there's no intrinsic difference between the life of a possum and a kakapo. So how do we remove possums and other pests humanely? There's no answer as yet, but that may be because no one seems to be asking the questions. Let's go now to a short interview with artist Angela Singer. Angela is a UK-born artist and animal rights activist who now lives in Wellington. In the early 90s, she worked with the animal rights group Animal Liberation Victoria in Australia and on an anti-vivisection campaign. Angela works primarily with discarded old hunting trophy, taxidermy, recycling it into new sculptural forms that explore the human-animal divide. Thanks for coming on the program, Angela.
Thanks very much, Sandra, for inviting me.
Now, when did your animal advocacy start?
Well, I can remember being quite young, so I was probably about 5 years old, and my mother was trying to get me to eat meat, and I was declining it because I had made the connection between meat and all the animals that I love, such as our pet dog and the rabbit at school, and pretty much every animal that I encountered, and so I didn't want to eat them because I didn't see any difference than if she was serving up any other member of the family to me. Mm-hmm. I think at that young age, although I didn't know it, but I was quite aware of the injustice of speciesism, mm-hmm. and also the oddness of that privatisation of love. I can also remember going to the butcher, and you know, the butcher was serving up meat, but he had his pet cat sitting up on the counter, so it must have been, you know, the days when you could have a cat running around in a butcher's.
Right. So you were born in the UK, I think, and you came out to New Zealand when you were quite young.
Yeah, I came out when I was 8 years old, and we ended up in Central Hawke's Bay, where I first encountered people hunting and killing animals on a regular basis, as if that was quite a normal thing.
You have become an artist. Did you train as an artist formally?
I did. So I did a number of different courses over the years in New Zealand and also in Australia. And then the last training I did was Masters of Fine Art at Elam School of Art, the University of Auckland.
You've got a very specialised field that you work in. Tell us about your work with taxidermied animals.
So first I have to do my disclaimer where I tell you that I don't taxidermy any animals myself and that I have never had an animal killed for my art and I will never use a live animal in my art or basically have any animal harm for my art. So what I do is, or what I began to do over 20 years ago now, was advertise for old taxidermy that people might like to give to me. And then when they'd ring up, I'd say, would you be prepared to tell me the story of how you came to get this piece of taxidermy? And I started getting hunters who no longer hunted giving me some of their collection. Mm-hmm. And really what sparked that was seeing taxidermy just dumped into dumpsters. For example, if an RSA or a pub was changing its date or closing, you'd see quite a bit of taxidermy just sitting out on the street. And I just thought, you know, that was just so bizarre that this animal had been killed.
Are you speaking of like deer heads and that sort of thing? What kind of taxidermied items did you find?
Deer's heads, goat heads, cow heads, bull heads, things from overseas, you know, elks, rabbits. Occasionally those things, you know, with the rabbit that's dressed up like a human and might be sitting on a chair or doing something similar. Just that kind of thing where it's just been, maybe it's a bit smoke damaged or just dusty, and so it's just been thrown away.
This is a program about possums, and I was really interested to see a photo of your artwork 1080, which shows a possum presumably dying from the poisonous effects of 1080. Now, you must have changed the taxidermied animal to look like that. Tell us about that process, and in particular that animal.
So that process is what I call really de-taxidermy. So the taxidermist has gone to the trouble of putting this shot animal, you know, the skin and they've gone to trouble of putting it into a very serene pose, usually, you know, like it's quite happy to be dead, or, you know, they hope that it looks alive. And so what I'm doing is I want it to look like it's either dead or dying. Mm. And if I'm going to show something of its death, then it needs to look like it is trying to escape or struggling. Or in this case, this particular work, I imagined it writhing on the ground. So its legs are in the air, its claws are curled, its mouth is open, and it seems to be foaming from the mouth with little tiny red beads, symbolizing blood. And I also, you know, when I'm using taxidermy, I will strip it back to expose those gunshot holes that have been sewn up and other wounds. And with the possum work, what I was getting at there is the effects of 1080. So when an animal consumes 1080, its organs shut down, and that is a slow process that can be up to 4 days of suffering for a possum, depending on the dose they receive. And it doesn't just affect possums. 1080 affects all air-breathing mammals. Come into contact with it and consume it. Or, you know, if something has died, an animal has died from consuming 1080, then it goes down the food chain and another animal eats and so on and dies. So I wanted to show something of that suffering.
When you're working on an animal, that animal is a stuffed animal, but it's still the hide of that animal, and you know that it has been a living being and one that has suffered terribly. When you're manipulating the joints and trying to change its appearance to presumably make people stop and think about what has really happened to this sentient being, what kind of process do you personally go through when you're, say, wrenching a mouth open of a taxidermied animal or changing its leg postures and so on? What kind of process do you go through? I don't know, do you say a little prayer or something?
Well, I kind of feel this connection to each of the animals. So in my studio, I try and take care of them before I start working with them. You know, I wrap them up. And then when I start handling them, I am thinking about not the skin. I'm thinking about the animal that lost its life for no reason. And when I'm wrenching, sometimes that's metal in there, but sometimes if it's old taxidermy, it's bone. And to wrench them and to, you know, rip and so on, which I have to say you have to do carefully because, you know, there's toxins in taxidermy. So you need a mask and gloves and so on. But it's uncomfortable. It makes me uncomfortable, but I also want to be able to show, you know, these wounds and scars that were inflicted on the animal through the aggression of humans. And partly that's also my aggression on the skin of the animal.
Yes. And the effect is quite powerful, and hopefully people do think about what this animal went through. And you've got so many other works of art, including the body of a deer without a head and so on, and you have changed it to make people think about trophy hunting. We've just about run out of time, which is sad, but I will put your website up on our Facebook page. But can you just tell our listeners where they can go and see your work?
Well, I mainly exhibit overseas. I've just had a show at the Animal Museum, which is a wonderful museum in Los Angeles, and then the next exhibition is in Mexico City. So, I mean, it's kind of a bit odd, but overseas, you know, there's this real interest in the animal-human relationship, which extends into the art world, and so you have these exhibitions around that theme. Mm-hmm. It's not so much here in New Zealand. We have this different relationship with animals. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we don't want them quite so visible in that way. So, yeah, I tend to exhibit overseas. But I have a website, angelasinger.com, and I have Facebook and Instagram, so I'll give you those links.
Yes. So if we just type in angelasinger.com.
Yeah. Or, you know, there's lots of work in books.
Yes, and we can Google you, and that will be good. I should just say that I think it's really refreshing to speak to an animal advocate whose message is through art, because it is a very powerful voice for the animals, a visual statement that carries the message very well. And I'd like to ask you, do you have any ideas how, because it is a problem, we have to acknowledge that there's a problem. 1080 is not the answer. The slow poisons that kill them from the inside out is not the answer. Blasting them from the trees, is that the answer? Is there a humane answer to the problem, in your opinion?
I think that there needs to be a way of limiting the numbers through limiting reproduction. That would be a way where they wouldn't, you know, they could coexist and it wouldn't get to the point where they take over in numbers. In Australia, where they've come from, they're a protected native species. They're not native here, so they're a pest. I know that Landcare Research have been doing some study on finding a way to limit fertility.
Mm.
But you see, I'm not sure. I think they've been developing with Australia an antigen. But I'm not sure how they would deliver that, because I understand it would have to be delivered mass, you know, like a mass drop, just like 1080 is. What problems will that create? Because, again, that's going to probably affect other animals. It's going to get into the waterways. Is that just going to create a whole new problem? So I'm not sure how they would deliver it.
Some time and resources put into it, I'm sure that there will be some more humane, less dramatic solution than we currently use. It's been brilliant talking to you, Angela. I wish you well. I'll certainly be following your work online from now on. And thank you for your powerful advocacy for animals.
Well, thanks very much, Sandra. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye. Oh, thanks to Angela, and I'll put some more details about her work, including her photos, on our Facebook page, Safe and Sound Radio Show and Podcast. Well, finally today we come to a recording I made earlier with Lindley Tullock, our Safe and Sound regular. She was out and about last weekend and paid a visit to Drury School. So, Lindley, what happened at Drury School the other week?
In the weekend, I was documenting the Drury School Possum Hunt, which is a fundraising event run by the Drury School.
Drury in Auckland.
In Auckland. They aim to raise money as a result of selling on the possums that they kill for their pelts. And one of the rules of the competition, because it's also like a competition to see who gets the heaviest and who gets the most possums, was that the hunters are supposed to ensure that the joeys have been removed from the mother's pouch and so-called humanely disposed of prior to them being brought into the weighing station. Unfortunately, that had not happened, and when I was documenting the event, I saw numerous baby joeys being removed from the pouch of the mother possums, and they had been shot over the last 2 to 3 days, so some of them had been dead for 2 or 3 days. Others may have only been killed that day. So a lot of the joeys coming out of the pouches were still alive, and a couple of teenagers were removing these joeys and then dropping them in a bucket. So I asked them what they were doing with them, where they were putting them, and they said that they were putting them in a bucket of water to drown them. So I managed to get some documentation of that occurring, and I went back home and I contacted MPI, and I also did some research and found out that drowning a newborn animal is actually illegal. The reason is that's extremely inhumane way of killing an animal, because newborn animals have got what's called a diving reflex, which means that when they go underwater, they instinctively hold their breath, so they actually dry drown, and it's a more painful way of dying than the other way, and I think it takes a little bit longer. If you drown a newborn animal, I don't know whether the classification is a pet animal or a wild animal, but you know, in my mind, it doesn't matter. The suffering is identical. But if you are actually caught drowning an animal, you can be fined up to $75,000 or spend 3 years in prison. That's a maximum penalty for that. I also contacted media, and they were appalled by what happened. They're running a story on it. I've set up a petition. And so far, I haven't checked today actually, but we were pushing 5,000 votes last night. Mm. The petition is to the Ministry of Education, and we're wanting to ask for a total ban on school possum hunts. Killing animals done with young children, it results in desensitisation of children to animal deaths and also to cruelty towards animal. It encourages children to objectify animals and to see their lives as not worthwhile, and The other thing that we're wanting to see a shift around is the use of the word pest. Better to use the word introduced species. And Nicola Creek actually has made this point from SAFE, and she's the education officer for SAFE, around some of the issues associated with school possum hunts and how this can impact very negatively on children. One of the things I found from the petition was that a lot of people from overseas, because of course it's a global petition, are absolutely appalled. They don't have the same level of hatred towards the possum that New
Zealanders.
Especially
in Australia, they admire them and protect them.
Well, this is exactly right. So it's a real contradiction for them, and they think of them as cute and fluffy animals, whereas New Zealanders tend to think of them otherwise, as pests and nasty and vicious, make out that they're some sort of villain. And in reality, they're an introduced species that have done what any species would do when introduced to a new habitat, and that is adapt or perish. In terms of an educational venture, or in terms of something associated with a school such as fundraising, what you've got to question is this okay in terms of the impact it may be having on children, and in terms of what our bad record in New Zealand for violence, particularly domestic violence, and the link between violence towards animals and that early desensitisation and the later ability to be violent towards other animals and also humans. So I think it's a very serious issue, and I am very frustrated that this has been going on for so long. In other school events, they may have a competition called the Best Dressed Possum Competition, and one little girl had a bridal gown on one. They dressed, one had a boxer, had sort of semi-skinned the possum and turned him into a boxer. There's a picture of a possum tied to the tow bar of a ute with a beer bottle sort of put in his hand. I mean, this absolute anthropocentrism is astonishing, shocking. Nothing short of astonishing, and modelling these values towards animals is absolutely disgusting.
Some people would think it was hilarious, of course.
It's not funny. These animals are sentient beings. They suffer just like any other animal, and it's not their fault that they've become vilified in New Zealand.
Thanks to Lindley. I hope you enjoyed our programme today, and I'd just like to end with a quote from Dr. Annie Potts. Why does this nation persist in framing the possum as public enemy number one and environmental evil incarnate? What would happen if New Zealanders were to adopt a more compassionate attitude to the history and fate of the possum in their country? Is it perhaps that our collective guilt for the possum problem can be assuaged through scapegoating the very creature captured and brought here, whose inherent innocence and cuteness might otherwise cause Kiwis to question their own motives and behaviours? Thanks for listening, everyone. Go well. See you next week.